Good morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Pardon me as I sit today and not stand. I gave a talk recently on being in a circle of fire, and that experience has continued with me. It's an interesting thing that when we begin on the path generally, we strive to bring our attention and make it inward. That is the process of meditation. Without making the mind inward, we cannot really attune ourselves to God. Everything of this world pulls at us. It strives to make us more focused upon the things of the body and the senses and the things of this world. And as a result, we become embroiled into this world and we forget our divine nature. Slowly, slowly, we begin to learn to make this mind more inward. More inwardly focused means the life energy is withdrawn from the body and it is concentrated in the spine and in the brain. In religions all over the world, the number 7 has significance. It does in the Bible, it does in the Gita, it does in all the different religions. And the reason is because we have these wonderful 7 centers within the spine and in the brain. For many people, they are dormant. At least the higher centers are more dormant. Rarely experienced. Why do we think of heaven as being something above us? It is because these eyes, when they are inwardly focused, rise up and focus upon the single eye that Jesus referred to, the eye that is at the center of the forehead. And it is through this eye that we might enter into the kingdom of heaven. So the life energy is withdrawn from the afferent and the efferent nerves, focused into the spine, withdrawn up into the higher regions of the brain. What happens here? We have these dormant centers. They become awakened. And when they become awakened, we have spiritual visions. We have spiritual experiences. We begin to see and experience this world in a brand new way. In fact, we go beyond this world. We go into these higher centers, and there we might experience our oneness with God. This is the great promise. Now, God is not a personage who hands out cruel kinds of sentences on this person and that person, this nation and that nation. Rather, God is the creative force and intelligence that has brought all creation into being. In fact, it is out of his own substance that he brings this world into being. And he, through his intelligence, plans it and executes it. We are a product of that divine intelligence that has gone forward. But we have been given free will, and as a result, we can choose what to focus our attention upon. Really, in the beginning, we had full conscious ability to know God. But through our own decision-making capacity, we chose to have more of an earthly experience, more of a human experience, and less of a divine experience, and we closed the door to the divine. With the effort that it took to close that door to our omniscience and our omnipresence, we now need to expend that energy to open that door. Only that door has grown rusty and creaky with time. And so we need a little WD lubricant in order to squirt onto the latches. And so we're given methods of meditation and of Kriya Yoga in order to help facilitate the opening of that door, so that we might enter in and know who and what we truly are. For we are not just this human body. We are not just playing this little human role for 60 or 70 years, maybe a little bit more, and then we have time to exit. Every one of us is an eternal soul, endowed with all the intelligence, all the creative power, everything that God is embodied within our soul. And as a result of that, we may experience our oneness with the divine intelligence. Master used to use the analogy of three bottles. Each one of the bottles was encased in another and had a cork put into the top. All three of these bottles were immersed in the ocean. And because they had corks in them, they retained a separation. There was no water in any one of these bottles. But one by one, the corks of ignorance, the corks of separation were withdrawn. And those vessels, those bottles, they filled up with the ocean water. And with the ocean water came the omniscience of God, that is the analogy. So it is through these ways that we come to understand that we are more than just this human body, more than just this human intelligence. And we have to be reminded again and again, because we are so accustomed to being in this human body that we no longer remember even having a divine experience. We no longer remember who and what we are in God. And part of this journey comes with faith. And so I was asked to talk about faith today. Before I do that, I'll complete my thought that I started out with of why I'm not standing. It's because at this point, how difficult it is to learn, make the mind inward when we first start on the spiritual path, it now takes that amount of effort to make my mind outward. It seems that all the rivers of life force that normally flow out into this body are withdrawn into the spine. And it's like a great engine of the universe that is pulsating with divine life as it pulsates up through the spine and into the higher centers. And it's a tremendous experience, but it, at this point, during these last 2.5 or 3 months, except on occasions when we have meetings together and some other instances, I don't have much faculty with this body. It seems like all the life energy wants to draw itself in, and it happens spontaneously. And it lifts me up, and it merges me into the divine being, and it's a wonderful experience. Now, Mother taught that we should lead a balanced life, so we should learn how to be both inward and outward. We should be able to merge ourselves inwardly with the divine experience, and then move outwardly. But there are times when God has a great work for us to do. And so during these times, such experiences as I've been having can occur. But back to the topic of faith, I'd like to read from the Bible today, Hebrews chapter 11. Paul is purportedly writing. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good report. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. By faith, Abel offered God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. And by it, he being dead yet speaketh. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him. For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles of Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, as many as stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand by which the sea by the sea and seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them far off, and were persuaded of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly, where God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. By faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and that he received the promises, offered up his only begotten son, of whom it is said, that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence he also received him a figure. And so he goes on to enumerate other examples from the old, what we call the Old Testament, around the acts of faith and why faith is such an important thing. Now it says that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And there's a delightful story that exhibits the difference between belief and faith. Once there was a great tightrope walker, and he was going to put on a display. So he went to Niagara Falls, and there he had strung up between the two shores a tightrope that he was going to walk back and forth across, and he was known as the world's greatest. And there were tens of thousands of people who gathered to see this event. And if you can imagine Niagara Falls with the great moving water underneath you, going underneath this tightrope, the sound of the falls itself, the winds and the gusts of winds that must accompany a river that large, all of this occurring at once while you're trying to concentrate 1 foot at a time walking across this tightrope. And if you fall to your death. So it's quite a thing. So all the people gathered on both sides of the river. Finally, the time came. He got up onto the tightrope very carefully with his balance bar. He crossed all the way across. Well, everybody just went wild with enthusiasm over this. So then he did an even more remarkable thing. He took a wheelbarrow in hand, and he put it on the tightrope, and without the balance bar, he pushed the wheelbarrow all the way across the river there at the Niagara Falls. Well, the crowd just went crazy with this. And so he called out to the crowd, and he said to the crowd, "Who believes here that I can cross once again in the wheelbarrow across these Niagara Falls?" And in a unanimous voice, a roar went up, "We believe." And he sat back for a minute, and then he said, "Who will ride in the wheelbarrow?" And that is the difference between belief and faith. Whether you're willing to get into the wheelbarrow or not. You can believe in something, but do you have faith in it? We believe many things. We are told many things, and we take them on as a belief. And some of them we question, and we do our best to verify, and other things just go straight into the subconscious mind without even really questioning it. But when we're called to ride in the wheelbarrow, that's a little bit something different. We can believe in many things, but what do we have faith in? What do we really, really deep down in our heart, in our soul, in the bones of our being, what do we have faith in? It is one thing to say, "I believe in God," and to do it without much risk. And maybe you have the support of the people around you. Maybe that's just what you've been told all your life, and you've never really questioned it. But really, if we have true faith, then we will be unafraid. Unafraid. And it seems today that there is so much anxiety and so much fear. And we would have to deduce from this that the fact that there is so much anxiety and so much fear, that really there is very little faith, even by those who proclaim to have faith. A faith in a divine being, a faith in their own protection, a faith in that will bring you great peace. I read here from Master in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. "The spiritually intrepid devotee is mightily armed against any foe that obstructs advancement. Disbelief and doubt, delusion's first line of attack, are summarily routed by undaunted faith, as are desires and all of their enticements that bluff with threats of unhappiness if not embraced. Fear robs man of indomitability of his soul, disrupting nature's harmonious workings emanating from the source of divine power within. Fear causes physical, mental, and spiritual disturbances. Extreme fright can even stop the heart and bring sudden death. Long-continued anxieties give rise to psychological complexes and chronic nervousness. Fear ties the mind and heart, or feeling nature, to the external man, causing the consciousness to be identified with the mental or physical nervousness, thus keeping the soul concentrated on the ego, the body, and the objects of fear. There's a feedback mechanism that is in operation here, because everything begins with an idea. If you conjure up an idea in which you might be injured or have some other kind of malady come to you, that triggers a cascade of reactions within the body that creates fear. It's a fascinating field of study, because once fear is injected into the system, your cells actually respond by creating more fear receptors. And so they become more highly attuned. This is a survival mechanism. If you can imagine that you are in a dangerous situation and you need all your faculties, you need everything tuned in order for fight or flight. And so your cells cooperate by doing this. But when we have a chronic state of fear in the mind, then it's constantly bringing this body more and more into a state of fear. The more the body is in a state of fear, it feeds back as a loop back into the mind. And it creates more fear. For instance, if you're walking in the woods at nighttime, and you're all right in the beginning, and then it's dark and it's nighttime, and you hear a noise. And suddenly your mind hears the noise and it thinks of a bear. Maybe there's a bear out there or some other wild animal. Suddenly all your senses are acute, listening, looking, in every way trying to perceive if there's danger and what direction the danger might be coming from. Now as you continue to walk, you see a bush and your mind conjures up the image of a bear. You see a stick on the ground and you think of a snake. Because there's very poor lighting, everything is interpreted by the mind as something dangerous. And if you don't get hold of yourself, you can just start running through the woods, and then you could fall into a ditch and injure yourself and really have a bad time of it. So the mind feeds into the body. The body then feeds back into the mind. And this anxiety and this fear grows and grows and grows. And as a result, we can be in a constant state of anxiety, of fear, all the time. The devotee should discard all misgivings, realizing them to be stumbling blocks that hinder his concentration on the impenetrable peace of the soul. So we have to start with the mind. We have to withdraw it from the things that we think make us afraid. 99% of the time, if we concentrate on what our circumstances are in the moment, we are all right. We may have financial debt. We may have things in the offing that will produce a state of anxiety inside of us. But really, in this moment, when we check in, we're all right. And yet we live with that anxiety all the time. So to withdraw the mind. Now, how do you withdraw the mind? You can't just focus it on nothing. Because nature abhors a vacuum, and so does the mind. So we have to learn what to focus upon. If we have an image of God or a notion of God, and we put our mind upon God, and we can just simply list the attributes of God. Papa talks about, when chanting the name of God, that you think of the attributes of God. O Lord, you are all-powerful, all-wise, all-loving, all-giving. You look after your devotees with solicitous care. You take care of me at every step. You watch out for me. You keep enumerating these various aspects of God and your connection with God. And as you do so, you begin to withdraw your mind from those things that cause you anxiety, and you put them on to the thing that gives you peace. When Papa left his home, he walked all over India. He didn't take any money with him. He had one single change of clothes. He had his dentures because he was toothless. And that's all that he took with him, other than chanting the name of God. And everywhere that he went, he found friends. He found those who loved him and gave him support when he needed it. And he also gave them something even greater. He gave them spiritual solace. He gave them inspiration. He was just one individual. But he took up his life and he followed that divine impulse. And as a result of that, he's changed tens of thousands of people. Master used to say, change yourself and you will change thousands. Change yourself. Live by that faith. Faith is the knowingness that you will be taken care of at every moment. Even when you go to take that last breath and you're about to leave this body and your spirit is leaving the body, and in total and complete faith you exit out of the body in total peace, focused upon the light, knowing that all those you are seemingly leaving behind, you leave in God's care. It's very touching when we read the story of Jesus being up on the cross, crucified, and he looks down and he sees his mother, and then he sees John, his beloved disciple. And he asked John to take care of his mother. And it's such a touching scene, because to the very last, he was thinking of others. And then he was thinking of God at the end, and God, I commend my soul unto you. And he released his spirit, and he ascended directly into the heavenly realms. We can all make such exits. This is not reserved just for one individual. This is the way that we should leave this body. Really, if you think about it, the leaving of this body is not something to fear. It is really something to look forward to. Because when you leave this body, you leave behind this heavy overcoat of a body. And you release yourself into spirit. It's so much easier living in the astral realms or the causal realms, or going directly into the highest spheres of God consciousness that are beyond form. And it's really much easier life. Now, this doesn't mean we should go out and commit suicide so that we can be done with the body. We're here for a purpose. And we're here to serve out that purpose, and it can only be done here on this material plane. But this material plane is the slowest and the densest of all the planes of existence. And so when we release ourselves from this body, it feels like we're being a caged bird that is being set free. And we can fly up into the skies. We can fly with the speed of thought. We can feel free. We can create actively just with the mind. And the astral realms are beautiful beyond compare. And the causal realms beyond them are even more vast and more beautiful. We're not giving up anything. And when we are able to commune through intelligence and through the mind, as we are in the astral and the causal and the spiritual realms, then all we have to do is think on somebody, and we are with them. And so we're not even leaving anyone behind, so to speak, when we leave this body behind. So it's a wonderful, it's a beautiful thing. Sri Yukteswar described, in the astral realms where he serves as a guru, as a teacher, there that Hiranyaloka is filled with very highly evolved beings. And when they are ready to go into the next realm, what we would call death. They throw a party. And everybody comes and everybody celebrates because it's a graduation. It's moving from a lower realm, so to speak, into a higher realm. It's going from the astral, the higher astral realms, into the causal. And so it's seen as a victory. It's seen as a fulfillment, as a completion. And if we have lived this life as we should, by the time that we leave this body, we too will have graduated. And we will have earned our right to be able to sit at the right hand of the Father. Now, the right designates here the pure, the wonderful, the uplifting nature in divine spirit. And so we can sit at the right hand of the Father. We can reside in divine consciousness. But you know, it's not an idle life. Master once said that imagining being an angel sitting on the clouds strumming a harp, he said, "My God, how boring. Why would you ever sentence me to that?" Life is far more engaging, far more dynamic. When you exist in the higher realms, you can create with thought. And when you're in the higher causal realms, you can create whole worlds, whole universes, out of your very thought, out of the fabric of your own being. You are truly a co-creator with the divine. You are right now. Only in general, we are not fully capable of creating everything that we can. In the autobiography of a yogi, Babaji brought into being a castle, seemingly out of midair. But he took the energy, the prana, the life force that was surrounding him, and he coalesced it into material form. Now that would seem to most all of us a miraculous event. But to him, it was as easy as anything else. Just as easy as you take a thought and you create it when you're dreaming. And then when you cease to be dreaming, that thought just simply disappears. And so when he was done with the castle, it just simply disappeared back into the ether from which it came. When we live a life of faith, it gives us access to these realms. When Jesus said, if you had the faith of the grain of a mustard seed, you could move mountains. Now we can look at mountains as a metaphor for the difficult things in our life, and then we can remove those. But for a great spiritual master such as Jesus, removing a mountain would not be out of the question. If he felt God's will to do it, then he could do that. So will and belief come into play, but faith is deeper. It is a place that goes all the way to the core of your being. In these experiences that I've been having, as I say, it feels like the pulsation of the engine of the universe pulsating through the spine. And it's a tremendous experience. And I sometimes have to remind God that I just have this little tiny body, and he's putting all these tremendous energies through it. And to remain a little bit mindful and not to make it too much for me. Because sometimes it seems that way. But I know that whatever he does is perfect and right for me. And if I didn't have that connection with God, if I didn't have that solid rooting in God, it could be a terrifying experience. So oftentimes when we read or hear about those who are having divine encounters, the first thing they feel is a kind of inner weakness. It's like all your limbs just start turning to rubber. And you feel in awe of the divine experience that you're encountering. But God always makes the same assurance. He says, be not afraid. Be not afraid. Let that fear pass through the body. It's just the body feeling a little bit of fear. And then you open yourself to that divine experience and you see what a tremendous thing it is. It really is. Master, continuing, in olden times in India, and in the Christian tradition also, it was customary for sages to seek solitary abode in the forests, deserts, or mountains for uninterrupted meditation. These remote areas, free of civilized invasion, were the natural habitat of such creatures as snakes, scorpions, and predatory wild animals. In India, even in this present age, we grew up with inspiring tales of witness accounts of reclusive saints whose sole companions were cobras and scorpions placidly seeking warmth against the body's taint, or fearsome tigers becoming pussycats. And who is not thrilled to the legend of St. Francis of Assisi, who tamed the bloody lust of the wolf of Gubbio? Beasts are conscious of the divine vibrations emanating from saints, because God-knowing saints see the Lord in everything, not in imagination, but realization. They neither harbor fear nor arouse defensive fear in the Lord's creature kingdom. For the enlightened, the best advice is caution along with courage, fearlessness in spirit, without rashly exposing oneself to unnecessary risks or to conditions that may arouse apprehensions. Everyone is given ample opportunities without willfully creating them to demonstrate courage and prove the power of faith. Death is perhaps the ultimate challenge of faith in mortal man. Fear of this inevitability is foolish. It comes only once in a lifetime, and after it has come, the experience is over without having affected our true identity or diminished in any way our real being. Illness is also a gauntlet tossed at the feet of faith. An ill person should try earnestly to rid himself of his malady. Then, if doctors proclaim there is no hope, he should remain tranquil, for fear shuts the eyes of faith to the omnipotent, compassionate divine presence. Instead of indulging anxiety, he should affirm, "I am ever safe in the fortress of thy loving care." A fearless devotee succumbing to the incurable disease concentrates on the Lord and becomes ready for liberation from the body prison into a glorious afterlife in the astral world. Thereby he advances closer to the goal of supreme liberation in his next life. A man who dies in terror, having surrendered to despair his faith in God and the remembrance of his immortal nature, carries with him into his next incarnation that bleak pattern of fear and weakness. This imprint may well attract him to similar calamities, a continuation of a karmic lesson not yet learned. The heroic devotee, however, though he may lose the battle with death, yet wins the war of freedom. All men are meant to realize their soul consciousness can triumph over every external disaster. When subconscious fears repeatedly invade the mind, in spite of one's strong mental resistance, it is an indication of some deep-seated karmic pattern. The devotee must strive even harder to divert his attention by infusion of his consciousness with thoughts of courage. Further and most important, he must confide himself completely in God's trustworthy hand. To be fit for self-realization, man must be fearless. So the opposite of fear is courage and faith. Everything comes from faith, because when we have an inner certainty that God is with us no matter what, in high or low, then we will be without fear. The body may have a slight fear reaction to a startle fact or other such thing, but it quickly passes. Just like the smoke that is made by a fire, if it is out in a meadow, a little breeze comes along, and all the residue of the fire is puffed away. If you are condensed into a fireplace and you burn that fire and it creates creosote in the chimney, eventually that creosote can catch on fire and it can burn your house down. And this is the ego mind that gets too constricted and holds the fear in the mind and in the body. And it catches a flame with fear and it can destroy you. There is the saying that a hero dies but once, but a coward dies 1,000 deaths. And isn't that true? Isn't that true? Let us from this moment forward proclaim with faith and with courage that we are divine beings, that we have a body, but we are not this body. And we are not the circumstances of our life. We rise superior to every circumstance. And when you have this remembrance, it is like opening the door that opens you into the reality of that divine experience. We can have a belief, but faith comes from knowingness. And the knowingness is what releases the divine potency. So that even wild animals can sense the divine vibrations within us and feel no need to attack out of their own fear, for fear produces fear in others. It's an interesting thing when you're sitting at the picnic table and the one person who's afraid of the bee will have the bee buzzing all around them and ignoring everybody else. Or a dog will come up to the one who feels afraid of the dog. And one of the reasons is because animals can smell adrenaline. And when you're afraid and you produce adrenaline, the animal smells that. Now they don't know whether you're afraid or you're angry and ready to fight them. In either case, they're out to defend themselves. So they go after the one who seems to have that smell of adrenaline issuing from their body. When you are calm inside, you don't produce that. You produce calm vibrations. And those who are around you will feel that calm. And it will produce a calm in them, even as fear produces more fear in others. So once and for all, disown fear. Stand in the body of faith. Stand in the body of light. And you will have such peace, such inward calm, that you will never look back on having fear and anxiety and wish for any of it ever again. It depends on how far in our outward journey out from God that we have attuned ourselves to fear as to how much it takes to reverse that process. But with a strong mind and a determined will, we can constantly withdraw the mind from the thoughts of fear and put them on to those things that produce a sense of peace and courage within. And we will rewrite the programming that has determined us to be anxiety, fearful people. And then a light will exude from us. And no one will come near who deems us harm. You know, people sense, predators sense, when there is fear because they see it as an opening. It's whether it's human predators or animal predators. But they sense that as a weakness and they sense it as an opening. But when you exhibit that strength, that light, then you will broadcast that to one and all, giving strength to your friends and dissuading your enemies from approaching you. You are divine beings made up of divine stuff, made up of God stuff. Proclaim that heritage within you. And ever seek to make it manifest within and without. Now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy
feet and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
To the light within you.